link. We still have some things downstairs in the property tax committee, and the other two will be up momentarily. I excuse myself to get started here. I have one witness to sign on HJ, no, wait, I haven't gotten up.
What is it? J25? Okay. So is Will.
Let's take House Bill 2216, Mr. Watson. Do I have you checked as against this bill, no?
Yes.
Tell us all. Since you don't use the jury clause.
Chairman, for the record, I'm Bob Watson, Administrator of the Corrections Division. I think I am requesting this bill be tabled. I think our interest in this bill was primarily prompted by the Corrections Division budget request, which in the early going of this, of its life, included forest camps in Plymouth County and Baker County. And we supported the bill as it was originally submitted, but it's been amended by the subcommittee looking at the bill, which said we could not contract out. So that really is the only thing, I think, of value that remained, and if that is the position of the committee, I just assume it's tabled. We don't really have need for it now, and there was no interest, I think, of it from the county side, if they could not have the inmates do fire prevention and forestry work for them. So without those provisions, we just soon see a table.
Okay. Mr. Fletcher, I assume you have no need to advance on the graves, is that
right?
Tough looking lineup there. Yeah, I'm in all three of you. Let's take 2671. Mr. Fletcher has brought to my attention Senate Bill 775, which shifts the control of the prison industry system from the division to a board of directors. Is that right?
I don't want to speak on Mr. Watson's bill. I think his bill
would go on. I don't know. Is 771 out of the division?
775.
Well, it's my understanding the Speaker is going to refer the bill to this committee, as he should. And I think we might be able to take some of the issues raised by these other House bills in conjunction with 775. However, since you're here, why don't we hear from you in relation to the House bills briefly, and then with the understanding we'll be going more deeply into the issue of the structure and conduct of prison industries in relation to 775. Mr. Fletcher, would you like to start us? Would you like to bring your shipwreck with you?
My bodyguard.
Bring your platoon forward, sir.
Chairman, members of the Judiciary Committee, I'm Irv Fletcher, President of the Oregon AFL-CIO, here to testify in support of House Bill 2671. Briefly, it comes as a result of a resolution in our convention, which probably came as a result of the mill makers and cabinet workers losing one contract, maybe two, to the pen industries. Needless to say, that got a lot of people agitated. In fact, the firm was out of Eugene, happened to be a union firm, too. And that's the reason you have this bill before you. Bob, you want to add anything to that?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm State Representative Bob Shiprack, House District 23, Clackamas County. House Bill 2671 seeks to repeal the extension granted to Penn Industries by the 1981 legislature. I am certain that those who voted for that legislation did not foresee the problems that have developed in Oregon because of it. In this bad economy, many people at the lower economic levels have been laid off due to prison labor, as other people here tonight will describe. On top of that, a system that pays its labor $3 a day had to go to the emergency board last year and ask for $800,000 of taxpayer money to stay in operation. No law-abiding Oregonian should lose his or her job because of prison labor. A friend of mine half-jokingly commented that soon a person may have to commit a felony in this state just to get a job. It is not that bad, but competition from subsidized prison labor should not be condoned, and I hope we can solve this problem. That's all I had to say. It's been my experience, however, at the speaking with other friends of mine just in organized labor, that the prison industries has taken jobs not only in the millwork, storm windows, but even down as got into the laundry business now. And the jobs they're taking from people, as I said, are the lower economic individuals of this state. And I think it's a real deplorable situation. Not only are they taking these people's jobs, but the taxpayer dollars is having to subsidize this. And I recognize the need for rehabilitation or whatever you want to call it, but we've got to draw some lines somewhere and bring some sanity into this system. I would hope that this committee, and I would plan to help all I can, work with anybody I can on this committee to correct this situation. Oregon today just can't afford this kind of competition, neither the workers nor the fair employers that we do have in this state. Thank you.
Okay, questions? Representative Spur?
I keep hearing rumors that our Eastern Oregon Corrections Facility is going to be remodeled using convict labor. Do you have any further information along those lines, or would this bill affect that?
Well, we're waiting to see where Senate Bill 780 goes. That's the bill that apparently authorizes the remodeling of the Eastern Oregon State Hospital into a correctional institution, and the Speaker has said that that bill probably tomorrow will be assigned to some committee. And yes, the information that I have approximately $139,800 that would be bid out will be done by inmate labor, convict labor. The painting, primarily all the painting and the floor covering and the demolition. We plan to make an appropriate statement on that proposal when it comes before a committee of the House. When that will be, I don't know. That's Senate Bill 780.
I guess my question is, would this bill affect that?
No, as I see them, they're two separate bills, but I'm not certain. Maybe Mr. Watson could answer that question.
Any other questions? President Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question that I have, I don't think that there's any question that economic conditions as they are now have caused both labor and management to be concerned about employment. I guess my concern is, though, if this bill were passed, would you feel the same way when we're back into good times, when the economy recovers?
Yeah, to give you a little historical perspective, 102 years ago, the predecessor of the National AFL-CIO stated its opposition to, then they called it convict labor. Probably a little harsher then, because they contracted out, as you know, to build the roads in the South, and still they do a great deal of that. We don't think that they ought to be competing with outside labor. That's it. That's a principle. How far you carry your principles, what you overlook. I imagine in hard times it's exacerbated, right? Right.
Okay.
And we get more pressure on us, obviously, during hard times. And I think there was more of a, not an incentive, maybe more temptation for private industry and others, public agencies, to seek out cheaper labor. For instance, to ask the Penn Industries to bid on the laundry at the medical school. That was one, and the Multnomah County, I guess, was contemplating using Penn Industries, the laundry, to do it. I understand the commissioners did, but I imagine in difficult economic times, why, that looks like more of an option, I guess.
Okay. Thank you very much, Herb.
Thank you. Mr. Miller, when we're speaking in terms of industry, is that mass production type of thing? I was over there a few weeks back, and there were fellows in the hobby shop turning out some leather goods and some belt buckles and things. This is not a separate
operation. We don't ever expect to put the gift shop out of business, nor would we want to.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, there are examples where the cabinet shop, for instance, that Irv was referring to, were put in, I believe, some of the cabinet work at one of the community colleges, and one of the millworking shops lost that bid. It's been brought to my attention that 8 different laundries around the state have lost, those people have lost their jobs, and convicts are now doing their work. I don't think that washing sheets and pillowcases is rehabilitation. You're just taking a job away from some poor individual that needs that job. It means a lot to him. And this type of competition is blatantly unfair. And I think the part that particularly grieves me is the fact that you pay him $3 a day, and yet I hope this committee has got this report research from Legislative Research on prison industries. This was updated February of 83, showing how totally inefficient Penn Industries is. I mean, you go to they went to the emergency board, even at $3 a day, they lost they had to get $800,000 from the emergency board. What kind of an operation is this? Putting people out of work, costing us not only tax dollars in income taxes by the people that they displace, they hit us again with this tremendous subsidy. I just hope this committee looks into it. It's ridiculous.
Questions? Okay, thank you both. Chuck?
For the record, my name is Bill Shuck, OSP, Oregon State Penn Industries Manager. And I'm here to testify against 2671. The 2671, for all purposes, puts Oregon State Penn Industries out of business. As I understand the bill, it would restrict us to only those products and services used by the industry itself, by the institution itself. Section 1B restricts us to products and services that private industry would not wish us to supply. Section 4 further restricts OSPI to only those products used for correction institutions. The result of that would reduce the planned 500 inmate workers that we plan to be using by the end of this next year from 500 down to 35. It would not only reduce that, it would also reduce our paid staff from approximately 52 budgeted people down to 2. One of the things that seems to be missed in understanding is these 52 staff supervise those 500 inmates for 8 hours a day. If we lose that supervision, then that will go back to the cost of the state taxpayers to pay for that supervision. My instructors and trainers spend most of their time in just supervising these people the same as a guard would in the terms here. It also must be pointed out that of the 200, our income is approximately $200,000 a month. Of that, $115,000 goes right back to staff, the majority of which are union members. $20,000 goes to inmates. That immediately goes back into the Oregon economy because they spend their money at the canteen for cigarettes and coffee and the same things we buy at store. The balance of that, of those dollars, are used to purchase raw materials from Oregon suppliers. The competition, one of the things we build, furniture. We do do cabinet work, but most of our work in furniture is in competition with furniture manufacturers outside of the state of Oregon, using materials manufactured outside of the state of Oregon. Our product, 95% of the material going into our product, is purchased from Oregon suppliers, and it uses Oregon wood, not Eastern steel, nor Eastern steel in the desks and chairs. There is competition, I'm sure, but not, and what I can find is that we actually create more jobs in Oregon than we take away, especially in the furniture area, which we have been criticized for pretty strongly by the media of one case that occurred in Southern Oregon. That's unfortunate, but our present line of furniture, our present manufacturing, is in competition with Eastern manufacturers and Southern California manufacturers, not to my knowledge, Oregon manufacturers.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Question Lombard.
Situation of Rural Community College, actually, the 1981 law didn't change that at all, did it? In other words,
to my knowledge, it did not.
Prison Industries had the authority long before that to bid on and construct for other governmental agencies, whether it be furniture, cabinetry, or the like.
And the 81 law did not. We've always had that law.
Yeah.
What did the 81 law do in terms of, has that got you the laundry business?
I'm not really sure what the 81 law did. I've only been with
the laundry since.
I've been there only 6 months, 7 months.
Well, I really think we need to know in view of some of the statements made here by Irv and others. You know, how many jobs? I like to know your laundry business. I would like to know that because that's always what we get hit with.
Okay.
You know, how many contracts do you have? How many? Because we are getting lambasted about this. As an individual who helped in the 81 law and then got hit over the head with it after the session, I'd like to know what impact that law had on the present Penn industry program in terms of competition with the private sector. This laundry thing, I'm still looking for some kind of statistics on that. These kinds of things I think I'd like to know, because otherwise I can't. The furniture thing I've not heard that much about. It's rather interesting. I don't hear. Do you get much criticism from what is the women's correctional plant you've got, which is really quite a plant, which puts together what?
Storm windows.
Yeah, what kind of problems do you have in there? Have you been hit hard in criticism of that production now?
Very little since I've been there. Because we have very low yield. I think $5,000 to $6,000 worth of sales a month out of the area. In the 7 months since I've been there, there's very little work, very little competition with anyone because they're producing nothing.
Well, you do laundry, you do furniture, you do storm windows. those are kind of, I like to have some kind of layout, because otherwise I don't, okay, that's all, Mr. Chair, that's the labor of the point.
Oh, is there a question?
Yes, that's it, that's, I'm through.
Was there help?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would like to know, what is the, other than Ken Industries, is there a focus toward training for the various types of jobs that are going to be available in the coming years? I mean, let me preface. If we can't, if we don't want to compete, what we can do to try to prepare an inmate for making a living once they get out is to train them for jobs that are available, that, or that we feel will be available. How much of that goes on?
We have, say, primary, they can get a high school education or GID. There's a two-year college program. They can go through through Temecula. They can get a degree. And then in the trades, there are the full scale, the full gamut of vocational training, the apprenticeship program. There's a welding, cabinet making, auto shop, body and fender, diesel, in the vocational training.
Do those cause any complaints? Those?
No, those not cause complaints.
They're not competing in any.
They're not competing in any manner.
And so your purpose then for Penn Industries is not only to train but to bring in income, is that
the? The primary, you know, the primary reason I've found for it is to reduce inmate idleness. Now, if you read of the riots and the problems of institutions throughout the United States, they invariably are connected with inmate idleness. One of the reasons I feel, and from what I've read I am convinced it's true, is the reason we don't have more problems than we do is we keep them occupied. There are a lot of inmates. We have 1,600 in the penitentiary alone, way over its design capability. One of the reasons these people do not cause us a great deal of problem because we are occupied. Our hearings officer, who hears complaint, you know, the problems that the inmates have, hear very few from those who are in industries because they have something to do. Most of them are the inmates that work in industries are thinkers, are smart, they want to do something, and if they're not busy working, they're going to be busy causing trouble. So inmate idleness is the main reason for having an industry, not to make money, but just to maintain some level of training for the inmates, teach work ethics, keep them used to going to work, keep them used to the ethics of working, but mainly to keep them busy, so they know.
What percentage of the inmates are involved in Penn Industries?
There are 1,600, I had 350 employed today.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Shuck, early in the session, I had a chance to speak with your boss, Mr. Watson, a little bit about the advisory committee, and I was a little, concerned that it didn't seem that the advisory committee had maybe as much of a role as I thought might be appropriate during some of the drafting at 2215, 2216. Have they, it's my understanding they've had occasion to maybe chew on these issues since it's become a matter of increased public concern. What's their role now, say, in the, you know, in terms of reviewing the legislation, or have they reviewed the same issues that concerns that have been brought to us in these bills?
I don't know. I have not met with the committee.
Okay. I guess that continues to be kind of a concern to me. Okay.
Okay. Anything further?
Thank you.
Tom Meek, Ron Opitz.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Tom Meek, the Oregon State Homeowners Association. Our association is made up of general contractors, general residential contractors who are builder members, and members who are in or subcontractors or suppliers or in other associated industries, such as cabinet makers. With me tonight is Ron Opitz, who is a construction consultant for the Willamette Valley for Northwest Natural Gas and is also our associate vice president of our Home Builders Association and was chairman of the Prison Industries Task Force, which we put together within our association during the last year. So, and introduced him, I'll turn the table over.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Ron Opitz, and I reside at 990 Wingate Street South in Salem. I am testifying in favor of House Bill 2671. In 1982, we were approached by a number of our downstate members, mainly associate members, concerning unfair competition by the Oregon prison industries. Two jobs surfaced that were the most significant and the most referred to. One, the Rogue Community College job, and another, the Jackson County Justice Center. It appears that looking into these jobs, that both were withdrawn from public bid, so there was no competition involved. In addition, referring to Rogue Community College, the bid for cabinet work at the college was estimated by the architect to be in the area of $180,000. We found later that it was awarded to Oregon State Prison Industries at around $70,000. The question of Senate Bill 891, what effect it had on prison industries, what it caused prison industries to have effect on private industry, it in fact opened the door to the employment of two full-time outside salespeople. And their outside salespeople were responsible for acquiring both of these jobs. We found upon our investigation of the situation that, number one, upon touring the prison industries and meeting with White Cup and Joe Favas, who was the director of prison industries at that time, with the facilities they have in their cabinet shop alone, they have the capacity, if put into full production, to conceivably put every cabinet shop in Western Oregon out of business. Secondly, at an average daily wage of $1.25 per day per employee, prison employee, that in no way do we feel reflects the actual cost of maintaining that inmate, which is in the area of about $25,000 a year. In addition, even at the $1.25 a day wage, we find that last fall they came up $800,000 short. Our position, we feel in balancing the need to keep prisoners occupied, which we recognize, and the effect upon competition, the dramatic effect, I might add, upon competition with Oregon Industries, we concluded that the Oregon prison industries should simply strive to manufacture goods that are not in direct competition with Oregon Industries. We followed our investigation and our conclusions by corresponding to the Oregon State Prison Industries Advisory Committee. We advise them of our wishes to place members on the advisory committee. We also made mention of the fact that we would offer our resources to find products that they could manufacture that wouldn't have a direct effect on Oregon Industries. We received absolutely no reply. In closing, we believe that this bill somewhat reflects our conclusions, and because of that, we really urge its consideration.
Thank you. Questions? There's anyone, Mark?
You'd have to agree, though, wouldn't you, that other than for the addition of the two sales positions, that prior to 1981, prison industries had the authority to enter into agreements with other governmental units to do exactly what they did at Rogue Community College and the Jackson County Justice Center.
The marketing goals as established by the Oregon Prison Advisory Committee, various goals were listed. And in the goals, they listed competition in the public market and outside competition as some of their latter choices of avenues of to get business. We believe that Senate Bill 891, because of their outside sales, put them in a much more favorable position to compete outside of the public arena.
But you mean to compete for other government business?
Not just government business, but that gave them a lot of latitude in competing with the private industries.
Oh, I would agree with you there in the private sector. And I'm saying that insofar as Prison Industries was authorized to enter into contracts with other government entities for the provision of cabinet work, furniture, and the like, that authority existed before Senate Bill 891.
That's correct.
Okay.
If I might, you know, that's absolutely correct. 891, either consciously or subconsciously, though, had the effect of putting them into high-grade competition, regardless of, you know, its effect was on public contracts.
Bill and a comment on the time period that's left blank on line 28 of the first page. We did receive a letter dated March 16th from the governor, well, signed by Jim Russell, stating that the governor has reviewed House Bill 2589 and is strongly opposed to its provisions. Because of this opposition, the governor's concluded it would not be appropriate for this office to make a recommendation as to the maximum period that a governor should keep an executive clemency application under advisement.
Are there any amendments proposed to the bill?
No, I don't have anything. Anything further on the bill?
Representative Courtney.
Possible movement, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that obviously 15, 16, Marion County Amendment, since seemingly an awful lot of people come out of the facilities, well, they may have been convicted in other facilities, stay here in this area, but I recognize the ACLU testified they were in opposition to that. That might not fly. They also were opposed to lines 8 and 9, in which we say if you don't follow the procedures, it's void. I don't have a problem with that, taking those two sections out of it. The only thing I'm trying to do is, what started this whole thing is, the samples case, in that you had a change of district attorneys quite a bit of time from the time samples filed his initial request to have his sentence commuted or pardoned. And then when the governor got around to his second request, nothing was done to notify the Marion County District Attorney the second time, because that had been done the first time. Now, that is the loophole, the problem we had. It's like there's no limitations on how long the governor has to consider such a request on the part of an innocent person. And while right now in law, and you'll see it in here, I believe, the district attorney is to be notified. So you'd say, why need the law? You have a situation, literally, where, you know, the thing could lie in the governor's office or desk for a year. You could have a change of district attorneys. No other follow-up notice is required. And that was the purpose of this bill. I don't know whether or not we need to go so far as to say if you don't follow it, it's void, or you also have to. I'm going to take out 15, 16, 8, and 9. But I don't have a problem with saying that there's got to be some kind of statement as to how long or some kind of additional notice should be notified if the first application is rejected. And ironically, as I understand it, the first application was rejected in 79 or something, I believe, he came in with his first application. When he came in with his second application is where the problem became, because they figured, well, we've already notified the district attorney's office. So That's where we are on the bill.
Well, let's take it. I don't want to. Let's take it section by section, Representative Corney, and see if we can work it through to a bill.
Well, I just moved to delete lines 8 and 9, 15, 16. Just start right there, knock them out.
What is the objection to serving the district attorney of the county where the facility is located? If at least the procedures set forth in here do not void the...
Hey, I love it. I just try to pick up votes.
Well, is that provision losing votes?
I don't know. I'm trying to get signals here. Let's face it. You're talking about Marin County. Because you're talking about OSP, OSCI, and I don't have a problem with that, but I didn't want to hammer on anybody in the committee. Well, let's, Mr. Chair, I'm on 8 and 9 be deleted. How's that?
Let's start with that. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
Sorry. I have a question on the issue in the next session there, 15 and 16, on A.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does the governor's authority to pardon extend to someone who could be incarcerated, convicted of and incarcerated in a county correctional facility, county jail? Seems to me a person could be convicted of a misdemeanor, and unless someone knows otherwise, and be incarcerated in a county jail.
So you think this is too great a burden? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm neutral. It doesn't offend me particularly. I can live with it.
I think that's true. I think
it would. Yes.
It would apply. Absolutely, no question about it. And, well, I might as well say this. What am I talking about? If we build those beds in Pendleton,
Umatilla,
and we start going out here with all this lease stuff, this thing all of a sudden may all of a sudden have much greater magnitude, geographically speaking. But I don't want to hide. I don't want to hit an agenda, you, Mr. Chair. Right now, it's Marion County.
Nothing hidden about that.
Well, what are you doing?
I don't think that 15 and 16
get harassed. You think I can live with it?
I don't think 15 and 16 pose a problem for subcommittees. I read the members, okay. But if anybody has a different feeling. Let's go back for a moment, though. You skipped a couple of changes. Let's
and that 9,
11, at least 20 days, but not more than 40 days.
Yeah.
And then down below in 24, line 24, sure. Notice required. Lapses if, upon the expiration of 40 days from the service of such notice, application has not been received by the government.
Right. Does that confuse you, or you just want to know why we use 40 days?
No, I don't understand what it means.
You want it longer? That's an arbitrary, I'll be frank with you. There's nothing sacred about it. That was just taken, I won't deny it. How about 6 months? Honestly, well, I'm not trying to be funny here. Obviously, this is a very serious thing the governor's going to do. He or she is going to need a lot of time to decide what they're going to do. I'll grant you that. What's the hang up, Mr. Chair? I'm trying to help.
No, you. I'm just trying to recall the provisions of the bill operating.
Well, Peter, why do we need that? 20 and 40 days, that window there. I mean, it seems pretty tight, but I mean, why do we need a window?
As opposed to any window?
As opposed to, say, it seems to me what you're getting at is there's a better way to get at what you're trying to accomplish, I think, than that.
Well, I wish Gruber were here. What happens if you don't put some kind of sideboards on this thing, goalpost? It's conceivable somebody puts some people on notice and then walks away from it in terms of notifying the governor, and then comes back at a later time and notifies the governor and says, oh, by the way, I also notified these other people who have changed in terms of their respective positions. And you're right back in the Duane Sample situation. So that's the only reason we ran in there with these sideboards or these goalposts, for that kind of reason. Otherwise, I would agree. It took me a while to,
All right, the next change is in line 13, the fully, stating the grounds.
ACLU didn't like that either. And I think they didn't like that because I guess they were still tracking on 8 and 9 in terms of the voiding. So if you take out 8 and 9, I don't know where they stand on that, but I know that's what they were upset about. They're afraid that, you know, technically you could throw the thing out, someone might have.
Right. I think that was a good deal of your concern, wasn't it? Yes. These stumbling blocks procedurally, what could be stumbling blocks,
right,
in terms of avoiding the entire process.
They didn't like 15 and 16 either. Right? Well, I'm lucky. I have you numbers by letters by that too.
Well, that also could be tied in some way to the voiding.
8 to 9, right?
I don't know. I can't see what policies.
I don't know.
Violated by serving the DA of that county. Right, let's go to 20. Upon receiving notice, any person or agency named shall provide to the governor as soon as practical, such, etc. Notice required lapses if, upon the expiration of 40 days, not been received by the governor.
Do you understand? I'm not trying to. That, once again, is a situation where the person has the obligation to notify these people. If they notify them, they don't notify the governor, so therefore you don't start the process up. What's the matter, Representative Springer?
Well, I'm having a little trouble following the sequence in 20 and 21. If, when there's a notice, there may not be an application yet, but if there's a notice, then we put a duty upon those agencies that they shall, as soon as practical, start providing information to the governor's office before the governor's office even has an application.
And no, I don't think that's correct. I read that line to say, as soon as practical, such information to records relating to the case as the governor may request and may provide such further information, may register it. So they do it. They provide such information as the governor may request, if he or she chooses to request any, or that they choose to put in, if they choose to get involved. That's all that's involved. It is conceivable this request would come, the notice would be sent to the district attorney of Marion County, and he or she decided to do nothing, and the governor wouldn't ask for any information from him, so be it. They got the notice, and they could choose voluntarily. But if, for some reason, the key person, the key player, didn't get notice, that is, the governor, never got the application, then this person, having satisfied the notice requirements, those requirements, in terms of that particular application, the door is shut on that process if a certain period of time goes by and they don't choose to get the governor involved. So once again, if they decide to crank it up again, what we're doing is, they've got to come back and provide notice a second time.
Okay, I'm tracking it now, I think.
I'm sorry, I realize, Representative Springer, you know, when Gruber put this together, I had the same reaction you did. He says, you've got to understand that if you don't say, once you start the process, then you've got a certain period of time to complete it in terms of notice to parties and application to the governor. Then, number two, the governor's got a certain period of time in which he or she has got to act on an application. If either one of them choose not to act within that period of time, everything lapses so that you got to start again. So to make sure that the key players are at least allowed to comment, and number two, that if there's a change over those key players, they will receive notice. They're successors. Do I make myself clear now? Am I still...
You know, I'm wondering, Representative Courtney, if it would make sense in terms of service of the notice of intention to apply, mm-hmm. if the governor himself or herself should receive that notice, mm-hmm. along with these other parties, such that if the governor had an interest requesting at that earlier time to start among these agencies in providing information, because he doesn't know, I guess, until he gets an application. But still, it would be what would be the harm in the governor getting the notice of intent himself?
He does, doesn't he? Right. You just, I mean, you think two is not, you need more than two. Proof by affidavit of the service shall be sent to the governor. You mean, see, this list could be later. Huh?
That affidavit could be later, though.
So what you're saying is you want to add a category in there?
Well, I was just saying that, I was just thinking that you might require that the application, or rather the intention to apply, notice of intention to apply, shall be served upon the governor. Add the governor.
All right. That's good. That's better. All right. Then what are you going to
take? And then we could provide that sub 2, provide that the service of notice upon the governor shall be accompanied by an affidavit of service upon the other entity, right, individuals noted in A, B, C, D.
Could you just read that last part of it?
Yeah. Line 19.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to having added the governor, but still as a subsection 2, I'm suggesting that we would provide that the proof by affidavit of service, or rather, we provide that the service of the notice of intent to apply on the governor shall be accompanied by proof by affidavit of service on these other individuals.
And then I can, and then we can delete 24, 25, and 26. Is that right?
No.
Well, then you've made sure the governor has gotten notice, and that's what that one's all about. And then you pick up on 5, which means you tell the governor he or she's got to act. They got so much time to consider the application. So why can't you take out 24, 25, 26?
Well,
take out the lapse.
You're concerned, as I understood, about the change in the individual who receives the initial notice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's taken up in the last line, 28-29. Upon the expiration of such period, if the governor has not granted the pardon, commutation, or mission applied for, the application shall have lapsed. Any further proceedings for pardon, commutation, or mission in the case shall be pursuant only to further application and notice. So what you say then, after you get rid of section 4 of 24, 25, 26, is now the ball's in the governor's court. He's got 6 months or whatever to do something. If he doesn't, it will deem to have been a denial, at which time notice requirements and all them have lapsed and you've got to start all over again. And that's already in existing language, 28, 27, 28, 29, lines 1 and 2 of 17, page 2. No?
This was a big issue in 81. This got us started.
Well, okay.
This is the thing that got us in.
Let me go back for just a minute for line 20. It says, upon receiving notice of application for pardon, is that supposed to say upon receiving notice of intent to apply? Because where is it, what requires that the actual application itself be served on any of those people?
Well, it says you got to put the grounds for the application. You've got to serve that.
In the notice of the intention to apply.
Correct. Right. Right.
What I'm saying is there's, strictly speaking, doesn't appear to be any requirement that the actual application itself be served on any of those
That's correct.
Individuals.
You're right.
So either you've got to build that in order to make line 20 track correctly, or you've got to change line 20 to say upon receiving notice of the intention to apply for, et cetera. Which will you have? Which do you think makes more sense? You see what I'm saying?
say you're right. What are you pondering here?
Better open the window.
We were particularly rough on Peter today in this select committee.
Really want the actual application served on all these people, the actual form and application, or you just want to put the notice, you know, I don't know what. So let's not believe it.
The notice has to include the grounds. Mm-hmm. The notice, as it is in line 13, would include
the grounds.
It says stating fully the grounds, at least so far, it says stating fully the grounds of the application.
Yeah, I don't know what, see, to me, that's why I'm getting confused with your comments, is that you put them all on those as to your grounds.
Yeah, but it isn't the application that you're serving them.
Well, but I don't know if that's important. Because the governor's decision maker, as long as they got noticed this person.
No, I'm not saying it's important. All I'm saying is line 20, as it's now written, doesn't track with the rest of the bill because it speaks of upon receiving notice of application.
All right.
And there is no requirement to serve notice of application. It's the intention to apply that you have to serve. So I think, given the contents of that notice, the grounds being fully set out, it probably would suffice, Peter, just in line 20, to amend that to say upon receiving notice of intention to apply for pardon, et cetera. Or of an intention to apply, the intention, whatever.
You wouldn't want to say upon receiving notice per section 1.
Well, whatever the right form of style is.
Yeah, I think it should track with lines 11, 12, and 13.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to
do. And so there's more than just the intention. They've got the ground. So I just, you're right, and this wording is not correct. But I think intention to apply is still a little bit limited in terms of everything that's required. But I don't want to go so far as to say they've got to actually give them the application.
Well, suppose we leave it in for form and style by London Legislative Council as to how that amendment would be stated, but it would be reframed to reference to the notice of intention to apply.
What
about the application?
Well, I'm curious. The notice includes a statement of the grounds of the application. Would the notice to be sent to these other parties also contain the grounds, or would it just be you are hereby on notice of an intent to apply?
Well, but you know, it's
no, it would be the notice described in subsection.
You know, that's existing. Please understand, that's existing law. I'm not making new law here.
No, it's the full content.
Okay.
If that's my hint or my minute.
Okay.
Is that our appearance?
You want to strike the word full and go back to the word briefly? Would some people be more careful with that? All right.
Well, I think you probably would want it.
Okay.
As long as it isn't a potential.
Okay. Okay.
Ground.
Okay.
Jurisdiction. Is that it? Okay. Let's keep pushing. Any person who applies for records. Now, 24, 25, 25. Notice required under this subsection 1 lapses if, upon the expiration of 40 days from the service of such an application for pardon is never received.
We remedied that by adding language to 2, subsection 2 of 1.
Well, how do we remedy it?
I thought we said we were going to serve the governor.
Yeah, but if your desire is to keep time of notice and the time of actual applications within some relative relationship, close relationship in time, so that you don't have the problem of the changeover in maybe DAs and something falling through the cracks. I understand that was part of your concern. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me the thrust of 24, 25, 26 is still valid.
I think so.
It says that if you don't follow up your notice with somebody.
Right. Do you want 40 days? That seemed to be a problem bothering some people. Do you want a longer period of time? 60 days? 90 days? 180 days?
40 is
you know. All right. In the next,
following receipt of the governor, Governor Schultz, and keeps such application or advice for periods not to exceed
the real thing.
Now, this question was asked to Russell, who wouldn't comment on it. He said, you give us at least, and he backed away and said, we're neutral. You just do what you want to do. That is, he didn't say do what you want to do. But.
Well, do you have a sense of what's reasonable?
6 months. 90 days.
Well, I think longer. I mean, 6 months.
Yeah. You're dealing with
180 days?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, you're dealing with somebody that got psychiatric reports, record inside.
Chairman, was the adoption of the amendments previously described, the wheat lines 8 and 9, in line ahead of line 14, insert paren A, the governor, and re letter A, B, C, D,
E.
It'll become yellow. It's going to become E. Line 19, change that line to require that the service of the notice of intention on the governor shall be accompanied by proof of affidavit of the service upon BCDE. Line 20, strike application and insert intention to apply. And if that's the problem?
No, when you get all done with that.
And if it's necessary, describe the intention in, by reference back in some way, we'll need that to be doing Gruber to work out. Line 28, insert 180 days in the blank. Is that all the amendments?
120.
80, 6 months.
180.
I don't think the ACLU will oppose this.
So objection to the amendments? Or further discussion, clarification, Linda?
Well, what I was sort of discussing here with Representative Miller is just a little bit of how this meshes in that. First, the person, all these agencies are getting a notice of the intention to apply. And then when they get that, it says they shall provide the governor as soon as practicable the information as the governor may request, and then it says and may provide further information that they decide is relevant. The one thing about were they to receive the actual notice of the application, they would know it was for real and that they should then go initiate sending these things even if the governor didn't request it. And so if they just get the notice of intention to apply and then don't know for sure, let's say they were going to initiate it and weren't going to wait for a governor's request, then didn't receive a notice that the actual application had taken place, then you may get agencies that either send it without it being necessary or leave it to the agency to find out whether the person in fact followed up. I mean, they could do that too, but you see where it doesn't quite.
Except,
couldn't we just insert a provision that requires that the application itself be served upon?
Well, that would be another
option. Trigger that requirement in relation to the notice of application rather than of intention to apply. Go back to the original language in line 20, but insert a requirement that those same entities be served with a notice with the application itself.
It's sort of tie-in, so you've got the tie-in period of the at least 20 days, the not more than 40 days before the actual thing happens. There's this whole bit in existing law about the notice of intent to apply.
Mr.
Maybe I missed what you were suggesting there.
There's nothing in present law about supplying information, is there?
Requiring the data.
Starting with lines 20, 21, 22, 23.
No, that's new about them initiating.
Yeah. So all I'm saying is that I thought I was meeting your point by simply saying we would also include a requirement that the application itself be served on them.
Oh.
So that they know it's for real.
All right.
And upon receiving the application or notice of the application, then the obligation to provide records or to respond to the governor's request would arise.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lamar.
Why are we requiring the service of two documents on all these people? The policy issue is that we want to get them to respond. I should think it'd be sufficient, perhaps, if we just amended the whole of 144.650 to say that upon application for pardon, commutation, or remission, copies of the same shall be served upon, and then list whom you're serving them on.
And they just walk away from it.
Walk away from it.
Don't even say they have to respond as long as.
And then you've got 180.
Well, no, I think you put in there on line 20, upon receiving copies of the application, any person or agency named in subsection 1 shall provide the governor's his practice with such information, records, etc. I think that's a good public policy statement, Peter, that you made there.
And you can get away from the expiration of 40 days.
Get away from the 40 days thing.
Governor got 180 days.
That's really up to the governor, it seems to me, how long he waits or she waits until the agencies and persons respond.
All right, let's require that the proof by affidavit that the service of the application, filing the application with the governor, will be accompanied by proof of the service of the application on the others. Yeah, that's simpler, I think.
Hey,
Representative Hill?
I agree, but let me at least comment now. The situation that Peter is concerned about, he's talking about